Welcome to the British Continental Podcast, brought to you by Continental. Continental have been supporters of the domestic road scene for over 25 years. The go-to tyre brand for elite riders, from the off-camber cobbled corners of the Durham Tour Series to the farm tracks of the Cycle Classic.
Hello and welcome to the British Continental. I'm Denny Gray, and today's episode features our latest catch-up with young super talent Lewis Askey, one of the 10 male riders on our recently published list of under-23s to watch this season. Just 19 years old and now into his second year at the under-23 level, Lewis rides for the Groupama FDJ development team. As regular listeners of the podcast will know, Lewis is keeping a diary of sorts on the podcast this year. We're checking in with him throughout the season to see how his year progresses. In our first catch-up with Lewis, recorded in the middle of February, he was on training camp in Italy. Now, a couple of months later, Lewis is having a short break after a run of five tough one-day races that has seen him make three appearances for the Groupama FDJ World Tour team. Those five races have been packed with incident too. The Samin was a lesson in how not to ride conservatively. He won the Most Aggressive Rider Award at the Grand Prix Jean-Pierre Montserrat. He had a close-up view of the Jake Stewart-Nasibouani clash at the Grand Prix Cholet. He helped Arnaud Démare to win at La Rue Tourangelle, and then had the disappointment of having to pull out of Scheldeprijs because of a positive COVID test within the team. In the interview, we talk about all of these incidents and a whole lot more besides. We also debut our Ask Askey feature, in which I put questions to him posed by our followers on social media, including knockouts such as, when will Lewis be getting a new pair of shoes, and who is his favourite gymnast? Before we begin the interview, apologies in advance for my mangled pronunciation of Scheldeprijs. I think I'd just about get there eventually. And for an errant swear word from Lewis's teammate, Joe Pidcock, who was milling around in the background during the interview. And don't forget also that you can still get 10% off your next VeloSkin order. Just go to the luxury skincare brand shop at veloskin.cc and use the code TBC-10. That's TBC-10, all capitals, when you check out. That's it. Over to Lewis. Good evening, Lewis. Where are you this evening?
I am back in Besançon. Back home. Yeah, back home in Besançon, back training after not racing.
After not racing in Scheldeprijs.
Yeah, after not racing.
I never know how to pronounce that.
Yeah, I'm the worst person ever to ask about pronunciation or names of anything. So I don't know either. But it is quite a big race, and quite a big race that I was looking forward to race with a good team, and yeah, didn't end up racing it because of I don't know if it's worse or better, but it was a false positive anyway, so it wasn't actually a case in the team, so we didn't end up racing, and it was all down to false positive. So
okay, so a false positive of COVID-19, of course. Performance enhancing drug, but the should make that very clear. But how does that work then? When presumably you all tested, are you, the day before a race or the couple of days before a race? How does the process work?
We're tested for these races 6 days before the race and 3 days before the race. So pretty much I get tested two or three times a week every week, which is wonderful. But yeah, so we had, the thing was, it was Easter, wasn't it, that weekend, and Monday, so all the labs were closed early or something like this. So we had our tests on, it would have been Monday morning, maybe, yeah, Monday morning. And yeah, we didn't get our results back until the night before the race. So everyone was in a good mood. Everyone was in good spirits. Arno was feeling like good. And we were all sort of getting a bit hyped up because the start was supposed to be absolute carnage with the wind, and as it ended up being. I mean, I know it wasn't showed on TV, the proper part of the racing, because I think it all happened in the first hour. But we were just so ready for that, and you have to get yourself really psyched up for it, because it's if you're not, it's not, you're not going to be in that front group, and it's not a fun place to be if you're not ready for that. So we were all really in that mindset, and then we had a message, urgent meeting now downstairs, and everyone was just like, oh no, because there was only like one thing that it was going to be. So it, no matter what, it didn't really matter then. The guy that ended up having the positive result, it just meant that he had to get retested straight away. He had an antigen test on the same night, which comes back quicker. And that was negative, but it didn't make a difference. He had to have his PCR test the next day, which also came back negative. But that was two. By that time, it was we'd already had to sort out everything. We weren't allowed to race, no matter what the situation. And it was quite stressful, because it was like people that had been in contact and people that hadn't been in contact, and like how that meant for the like Belgium rules, never mind the UCI rules and all that. So it was quite lucky he ended up being false positive as well, because it just meant that we didn't all have to quarantine and all that sort of stuff straight after, so I can carry on training and not being quarantined as I come back. So
Wow, okay. And the last time we spoke to you was back in February. You were in Italy in the middle of your training camp. How would you sum up what's happened since? I mean, obviously, racing started. You've got five races under your belt and unfortunately not shelled prize, as you just said. But yeah. How would you sum up how things have started for you this season?
All things considered, I would say I've had a pretty... a pretty good start to the season. I've been going well. I suppose I've been lucky really as well with the World Tour team and the Conti team. We've had a lot of races. I know a lot of people are struggling for races, and we've had a lot of really good high level races to put myself into and gain form. And I've been riding well, and because of that, I've been getting opportunities to ride a few times with the World Tour, which has been really cool. So obviously I've not a little bit frustrating that there's not being the under 23 races, because I am sort of really wanting that opportunity to get, feel like I'm back really racing for the win, you know, because even when I race, like I did that Cholet with the World Tour team, like even then, it's probably at a level where I could have competed in that race, but I'm obviously working for Jake, so in that situation it's not me racing. I'm just doing my bit, which is cool, but I want to get myself in fighting for the win in some of the 23 races, which hopefully I'll be able to do this year, maybe if things carry on getting better. So because the team went to Italy last week and did a couple of under 23 races that went on, and they went really, really well there. So we won the first one and was third in the next. So it was a good weekend out for them. I didn't go to them because I was racing a couple of races with the World Tour. So
it's kind of a double-edged sword in a way. You've been getting high quality racing with the World Tour team, obviously impressing the World Tour team, but on the other hand, you're not getting the opportunity to race for yourself.
Hopefully there'll be the opportunities this year, and I was gutted. Obviously Roubaix is now being cancelled for us, so it's 2 years now gone, and it's not one that you sort of need more than 1 year with it as well, but I think because you need that little bit of luck at Roubaix, and so it's the more chance you do it, the more times you do it, the more chance you have of winning it. So it's another year down, which is a shame. But
I guess we should explain for the listeners' benefit, the under 23 Paris-Roubaix has been cancelled, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unlike the elite version, which has just been postponed.
Yeah.
And I guess, unfortunately, because it's a World Tour race, you wouldn't qualify to race that, even if the World Tour team wanted to select you, would you?
No.
So the first race of the season was Le Samin. I mean, I think we talked in the first episode or in a previous episode with you anyway, that you had a particularly aggressive race in your first year at that race last year. How did it go for you this year?
I completely messed it up. I was furious with myself after the race. It was not a good start to the season. I had really, really, really good legs. I just completely messed it up. What even happened? So when we were speaking in the night before the race, about what was going on and all that sort of stuff, my basically role was to do as little as I possibly could to try and be there in the final, because last year I ended up getting too excited too early, as I often do, and burning out when we got into the last half an hour, 40 minutes of the race. So this year the plan was to stay, basically save as much as I could until it got to the pointy end. And because of having that in my head, I ended up doing it too much and not actually keeping that like racing instinct sort of in my head. And so when the break initially went, well, it wasn't even a black break really. It was too big to be called. It was 25 maybe riders, something like this. And I was on the wheels. I was on Cav's wheel when he got into that break, and I could have, because it was like sort of after a sector when the guys are still coming back onto the back of the pack and we were sat in. And I think because Van der Poel wasn't in it, in my head it was still like, oh, the race is going to come back together still. But normally I would have always been in that breakaway, like the same as I was last year. And I don't know why I didn't follow it. And if I did follow it, I would have probably ended up having a really, really good race because I had the legs to go with it that day. But I didn't. So I ended up then in the pack, and every single lap I'd been in such good position. So I was always in the right place at the right time, hence why I was there when the break went. And the next lap, again, I was in a good position. And then I just got swamped coming into the one corner, just picked the wrong side of a wheel, basically. And someone snapped the chain or something. I went backwards, was in a bad position going into the sector then. And that was when Van der Poel and all that attacked initially to get across, and I was not in the right position, and we came out the end of the sector. I'd moved my way up, and the bunch was just completely strung out in ones, and I'd moved my way up all the way to the point that then some guys in front of me let the wheel go. And in my head, there was still loads of people behind me. I didn't think at this point it was splitting, because it was still together, even though it was strung out, it was still together. So this was my biggest mistake of the whole race, and I don't know why this happened, and it still pains me, and I go over it in my head every single time I think about it. But when these guys just let the wheel go, I was like, well, I'm not just chasing it. I'm not doing that. I'm not wasting my energy, because I've been told to save my energy. So I'm not going to be the one to close this gap. And by the time these had pulled off and I'd stayed on the wheel and not just gone straight round and back onto the wheel, I looked behind and realized there was no one else behind us. We were the front split. And by that point, because of the speed it was going, I must have been, I don't know, say 10, 15 seconds away from the front group, which was tramming along with Van der Poel attacking at the front and Alpecin Phoenix just driving it so he could try and get across. And I did an absolute max effort. My heart rate, I set like heart rate PBs for about a minute and a half, and I got all the way back onto the wheel. I got back onto the wheel of that group, and then it turned left and it was like a slight crosswind and they kicked out, because I was right at the back of the corner and I'd already gone absolute max, like it was the end of a race. I got dropped, and it was the most painful situation to be in, because I'd messed up twice in the space of 5 minutes and not being in the break, and then I just had to go wait ages for the next peloton, which was basically out of the race by that point, to catch me. And yeah, my race was done by then. So there's not much I can say more than that, really. I messed up, and yeah, it was it was not a fun start to the season. But I sort of just took the fact that my legs were good and I'm not going to mess up like that again. So I've just got to try and find that balance between keeping that racing instinct and keeping that what I'm good at doing, but without killing myself before, without killing myself 30 minutes into a race.
Yeah. that's absolutely fascinating there, Lewis. I mean, I guess it's a learning experience for you, isn't it?
Mm.
That kind of balance seems to be something that, I mean, even, you know, watching Flanders and some of the other races this year, the biggest classics, watching people like Tom Pidcock and even Van der Poel and Van Aert, that, you know, they can seem to get overexcited sometimes and overextend themselves. So I guess it's a tricky balance, isn't it? For someone like you who kind of just loves to race and attack.
Yeah, especially when you get into I've gone from junior racing where it is sort of, there's no stopping. It's just full gas, full gas, full gas. And even then I was a little bit too much, but normally in the juniors, you can get away with it. Cause when it splits in the juniors, normally it splits like that. That's it. Like if there's that split over the climb or there's that split in the crosswinds, that never comes back together. But I found in the higher level the race is, the harder it is for it to split. So the same way, when I did that Bredene Cogside Classic, it was full gas from the start. It was echelons, full speed. It was like 55, 56 k an hour average for the first hour I had some stupid average powers. And I was in every time it split. At one point, I remember looking back and seeing 7, 8 echelon, groups on the road, just all in echelons, and it was just carnage. And I was in the second one, which was only about 5 seconds away from the first one. So it was like the quick step train. There was maybe 3 or 4 quick step lot in there. And I was in the next echelon with Jake. And I was like, I was over the moon. Cause I was like, yes, I've made it. We're going to come in and I'm going to be in that front split. But it all came back together before we came onto the Kemmelberg. But by that time, I'd gone so hard to be in the right place at the right time. I just lost all my legs. So by the time the race actually, because it came back together and then went again, I was done. I was finished by that point. So it was, whereas normally if that was a junior race, if that'd split that early into the race, it'd be finished. So that's the one thing I've found. And obviously going is from the juniors, they're like, I don't know, three hours, something like this. And you go into under 23 and it's more like 4 hours, but I've not really done any under 23 races. So I've gone straight from that to 5 hour races. And it's just trying to get that endurance for me. I've got the speed. I've got the speed when I've been racing against the top guys. It's the more the being able to do that at the end of 200K, which is something I've found even this year has come on a lot better than it was last year. So I do think it's just that, just getting the years and the miles and the growth to get better at that, really.
Yeah. So that was Le Samin, and you mentioned the Bredene Cogside Classic there. Your second race there was the Grand Prix Jean-Pierre Montsoret. Mm-hmm. And you got a lot of TV time in that race, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a it was going to be a sprint always. That race was supposed to be anyway. And so my best shot, I've probably taken him out a bit of anger from the race before as well. But I got told to see if I could get in the breakaway. So I did, went into the breakaway. It went really quick. I had to go really hard to get into the break, but it went quick. And then once we were there in the breakaway, after the first half an hour or so, we really let off the pace. And I thought it was a really good group, a really strong group. Because of how hard I had to go to get into the break. And we then rode round for, it was 10 laps, and we'd rode round for 7 laps, really, really, really easy. And the peloton obviously didn't want to catch us early, so they rode round easy as well. And we had quite a big group. It was, I can't remember, nine of us maybe, something like that. And so we were talking in, and I was getting actually more and more excited because I thought, you know what, we can do this, because they were keeping us at, say, 2 minutes or something like that, two and a half minutes. But I thought we were all just fresh because we'd only done that little effort to start with to get into the break. And then we were allowed the gap. and we didn't have to work for it at all. And so we were speaking and we were saying, right, we're two laps to go. We're going to hit it and just go full gas. It would be 40K to go. Say we had 2 minutes, 40K to go with 9 riders, and we were going to do sort of 10 second turns on the front, like a big team time trial. That to suddenly turn on the, like, turn on the gas full speed would have shocked the peloton behind. That would have been something like, because there's not that many people. There was a couple of big teams, but there's not that many people that can be used up to race. So if we're fresh and they're fresh, but we've got 9 people to work like a team time trial with a 2 minute head start, there was a big chance that we could have actually, like, pulled up a bit of a surprise a bit. And so I was getting more and more excited, and we got to 2 laps to go and was like, right, let's go. We must have rode for about 5 minutes, not even that well, and people just started skipping turns, sitting on the back, dropping, and I was like, oh god. So it was like, it was just a shame, because then when people were sitting on, obviously then other people think, oh well, I'm not going to go through as well if he's doing that. And then that caused some people to start attacking, and as soon as that happens, you're just slowing yourself completely down. As soon as there's that acceleration, then stops, and then acceleration and stops, there was no chance. So I knew within 5-10 minutes that, yeah, the race had gone away, even though I was getting really excited for the chance to the chance for the breakaway to make it all the way to the line. So then really it just got messy. We tried a couple of us that were getting annoyed with the guys that were sitting on for, right, we'll try and attack out of here. So then we attacked. But then people like jumped back on, and then there was more attacks going. And in the end of the day, it ended up splitting, and I was in another group of 4 or 5, something like that, that came across to me. And then we didn't have a chance for the win by this point, because it was only 4 and everyone was, by the looks of it, knackered. And then we hit this next cobble section, and a couple of, like, the last K into the cobble section, I was trying to work with this group to try and stay away for as long as we could. Obviously, the more people we have, the more chance we have of getting to the line. And they started just sitting on my wheel going into the, like, with a K to go. And I was like flicking my elbow and no one was coming through. They were just sitting on. And I was like, I didn't know what was going to happen or if I was going to get attacked on the sector. I really didn't understand, because there was still 25K to go. And then, yeah, we rode on this sector, and then I came out the top of the sector and I was the only one left again. And then it was just me on my own then with 20K to go against a peloton with loads of trains. So that was never, ever going to happen. But obviously I couldn't just sit up by that point. So I had to do my own little time trial and stay away for as long as I possibly could. And then we came round with the bell, and another little break had jumped off the front of the peloton. So I managed to jump into that, and that could have been a good opportunity as well. But that all came back together. So yeah, I did end up getting the most aggressive. There was some prize, some most aggressive rider of the day. So I got to go up on stage and have a chat with the podium, the guys that got on the podium and that. So that was pretty cool. It was worth something. Have a big day out, but yeah.
Was that your kind of first experience in a break of that kind, in a race of that kind?
No, I don't. Last year, I suppose at Salmon again, last year, I was in a break sort of like that, more before the TV all started, and then it came back together. I wouldn't say it has been. I've been in a few. Normally, I was in that last year as well, in that break that got caught with about 6-5K to go, something like that. So normally, if I get told this is your job, same at Mont Ventoux race I did the year before the World Tour.
Of course, I remember that now. Yeah.
If they say get in the break, I'm normally pretty good at being able to put myself in it.
Great. And what does it feel like to be in a break? I mean, does that feel like mission accomplished? You know, you finished, you kind of almost know you're not going to win the race. Most breakaways of that kind in that race, when it's normally a sprint finish, you know you know things are probably doomed from the start. But nonetheless, yeah. You do it. Does it feel like mission accomplished, you know, just for being the last man standing almost?
For being the last man, I suppose. I was more thinking when, if you get like, especially like the race when I did last year, the Mont Ventoux one, it was like, there was no chance I was winning that race. So the job was to get into the breakaway and do something there. So that was sort of like, once I was into that, it was like, job done. I mean, you still got to ride hard and do what you got to do for the rest of the day, but it's like, like, you know, team's going to be happy, job done, nice. And the other day, it was sort of like that the other day, yeah, as well, at Monterey, because it was like, got in, and it's sort of like, there we are, job's done. But then with how the situation evolved, it got a bit more like, you know what, this could actually happen. But I'd say, yeah, it can often be, if it is a race that you've got nothing to, yeah, nothing, like the same at Scala last year, Scala Parigi, it was kind of like that, because we weren't going to be allowed to win that race. So when it was like, you know, me and someone else in the World Tour team that got told, right, you've got to be into the break, to like be the one that got into the break, it's like, cool, job done. But yeah, normally, the breakaway is weird, because it's in the World Tour races, it's a big fight to get into the break. And then once it goes, the teams block the road, or not even block the road, depending on which teams are there. They just let it go then. They want the break to go. They don't hold it at a certain time. They let it go out to 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, depending on the race. And then they start riding to hold it there. So it's a really weird scenario where the breakaway also knows that now. So once you've gone hard in the breakaway, everyone's like, right, stop. Because they're going to be stopping behind, we're going to be stopping, they're going to let us have this amount of time. So it's then about saving as much energy as you possibly can and getting as much time as you can, and then turning it on without the peloton knowing you're going to be able to turn it on. But it really depends what race it is, because like I said, at that race last year when I was in the break with Cav, he was on the radio screaming down like, who's chasing, because we had to ride really hard all day there. We weren't given anything. It was like, it was out to maybe a minute and 20, and we were really still riding hard the whole time. And it's 200k race, and we had to ride hard the whole way. So we were never, sometimes they just don't give you any slack, but it really depends on the teams there and the level of racing.
So after Montserrat, you've essentially been riding for the World Tour team, haven't you? I mean, there were with Schelder. Scalder Prize, I'm going to get it right eventually. Yeah. If I say it differently every time,
one of them might be right.
Yeah, but you've essentially been riding for the World Tour team. I mean, how does selection for the team work? I mean, how far in advance are these things planned? Are they kind of last minute call ups? On what basis are you selected?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. You sort of get put into races. I think it's also with everything going on at the moment, everything's a quiet last minute, where different races being cancelled and people being moved around and people getting ill and people getting injured. It's always can be quite last minute. So I did have like other races as well with the World Tour, but then some races were cancelled and so then I get like booted out of that because someone else in the World Tour needed to ride that race, or it's all a bit messy. So you think you've got a calendar and then it can all change. Like this month's gone, it's changed so many times. Cause I was even supposed to be doing some mountain bike racing this weekend, and that all got shut down now because of, France has gone into sort of like a weird lockdown for 3 weeks. I don't know. They don't tell as much, if I'm honest, about how they're selecting stuff or why people are getting selected for stuff, but it just gets put into your calendar, and they go, oh, you're do you want to race this race, or you're going to this race with the World Tour? Cool. That's about that. Go on.
So I was just gonna say, I mean, you must be impressing the team though to be selected on such a consistent basis.
I'd hope so. The team are pretty happy with everything that's going on. I think I'm quite consistent and reliable and not afraid to tell people what I think in the race. You know, I think a lot of times people can be scared and new to a World Tour team where they don't feel comfortable to not even call the shots, but, you know, challenge stuff and ask questions and be in the right place at the right time and organize a team, even if it's not my job. I'm quite reliable, I suppose, to be there at the right time. I can normally, if it's a messy, sketchy race, I'm there. And I think I've quite liked that consistency. And obviously with Jake as well, both been British riders, me and him have worked quite well together. And it's quite nice for him to have someone he knows he can rely on as well when it comes to the final and stuff like that. So I think, again, they're not going to be like, oh, we love you so much and tell me how much I'm doing or what. So, but I think, I'm really happy here and I get on with everyone and the team and the staff and it's a good environment. So, I think we're impressing, I suppose.
Great. And what was it like? You were in the winning team, Tourangelle, mm-hmm. With Arnaud Démare winning that race. What was that like to be, to be part of that winning team?
Yeah, that was cool. We did, honestly, we messed up a little bit. We burnt our matches too quickly and AG2R did us quite dirty, really. We rode, being the favourite team there, like Arno came with his train. So the pressure was on us, really. So we'd controlled the break all day and then we made sure we rode the whole way into the technical tight cobble sections. So we were on the front, and then we were stringing it out and then we brought the break back and we basically just rode way too hard to get ourselves in the right place at the right time and then continued to ride hard, which meant then when we hit after the first couple of hills and we brought the break back, we got countered after already being a little bit fatigued by three or four AG2R riders at once. And that was a real then. That had to then, me and Benjamin Thomas had to both put in a real big effort to get that group back because that was a dangerous attack. And that had basically finished both of us. So we had to be used for that. So that left Arno with only two more guys because one went for a P-stop before we got into the technical stuff and he never got back. And so he was he had a bit of a earful because we could have really, really done with him there. When we'd messed up a little bit. So Arno was like, luckily we managed to still control it. He just didn't have a lead out in the end. But we had managed to control the race that it just did come down to a sprint. So the fastest sprinter was going to win, which was nice. And also, it was really cool that weekend because it was my first race with Arno and obviously I didn't know what it was going to be like and he's just the most genuine, down-to-earth, good guy I've met in the peloton, really. He's really just, obviously, because he is a big star. He is one of the biggest names in cycling. So, and I've met other people that are big names in cycling, and you know the big names in cycling, not in a real bad way, but you know they're a big name and they're sort of, they've got that, I don't know how to explain it about them, but he's really just, you wouldn't know he's any different to anyone else, and he's a good guy. So that was really nice, and it really makes you want to do the best you can for him as well then in that situation. So that was really cool for him to win that race. And there was really good vibes going into the race that we didn't end up doing as well. So it was a shame.
Yeah. Do you get starstruck when you meet some of the bigger riders that come across them in the peloton?
Honestly, I'm not that sort of, yeah, I'm pretty bad for that. I don't, for me, they're just, I think it's, I get the feeling that it's cool. It's quite, it's a cool feeling to be riding around when there's like Pedersen there or Cav there and you're thinking like, you know what they've done. And there's like all these different people and like Van der Poel and you, yeah, it's cool. But I don't really, I'm not really that much of a fan of it. Like where I'm like, oh my God, it's this guy. To me, they're still just the same as anyone else. They're just pretty fast at riding the bikes. That doesn't change anything. For me, it's more like I got a lot more respect for the people like Arne who are just genuine down to earth guys that can kick everyone's ass on a bike. The answer to your question is no, not really.
I think what you're trying to say diplomatically, Lewis, is that there are some bigger stars that kind of act a little bit aloof, whereas Arno's a lot more kind of friendly and down to earth. And
it was really nice because in that group in his train, I really just felt like I fitted in straight away. I didn't feel like I was the new kid coming into the group and oh God, he's like just on the side and they're trying to include him sort of thing. It was really nice to fit like straight in and feel like we had a good couple of days. So yeah.
Great. And of course you were racing with Jake when he had his, I guess almost infamous clash.
He's done pretty well out of that, hasn't he?
He has. I mean, I guess you wouldn't have seen the incident, but you would have heard about it afterwards. Do you have any kind of thoughts or feelings about what happened?
I actually did see because I was only just, it wasn't long before that I dropped him off. So it was a shame because there was eight of us, FDJ and the team on that day. And when we came into the finish, it was only me and Jake left into that finishing straight. And it was a shame because if we'd had one or two more guys there, that would have never even occurred because we would have had a good lead out train for him. But as one little guy, I couldn't, unfortunately, match the whole train of Cofidis, I think it was. But I managed to, we came around the final corner and I managed to sort of just, keep Jake on the, bring him up and just drop him onto the wheel of Buani with about 400 to go. So I did my effort there. And then I was just sort of looking and looking and looking over the top of everyone's heads then, just praying that he was going to come out away with a win. And so I just saw him go straight to the barriers and was just amazed that he managed to stay up. But yeah, in my head, how do I actually feel about the what went on? I think on the video, it does look worse than it could be. When I looked back at it, I can see that maybe Buani. But the thing was, right, I'm speaking gibberish and not actually making any sense, but there was the wheel of Viviani, wasn't there? And Jake and Nasser were both fighting for it well before they came into that shot where you see him push him into the barriers. So he knew he was there, but then when you look at the overhead shot, Viviani goes and Nasser sort of hesitates and then decides, crap, I need to go for that wheel, swings across, hits into Jake, and then I think then as sort of like a reaction in the heat of the moment, he's just threw himself, like he's hit someone and he's thought, I need to win this battle, and he's just thrown Jake into the barriers. And it's the problem is as well with him is he's had problems with Jake before, he's just had problems with other riders before. He is known to be that sort of rider that's he's throwing himself around, he's being a bit, he's taking it a bit too far, I suppose. And then when you get a video like that with a bit of a history already, people are not even going to give you the slightest benefit of the doubt. That's where I stand on that. I, this is a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, clearly, I guess none of us would kind of condone some of the abuse that Bhiwani's had since.
Exactly. It annoys me so much because, you know, you have people that it's something that really annoys me is Twitter and people's comments. That it really is something that I just look at it and I'm thinking, what goes through, like, where have they been brought up, or where have they got this in their head, or where have they got this, just how is it even a, like, I just don't understand the thought process that people go through to write that, or even if people have that in their minds to, like, to write that on to what they think. I don't understand what they're saying. I don't really understand why or what people think they're gaining or doing, or it's just, yeah, I don't understand it. I think my point of view, obviously I'm on Jake's side with the Nasser incident. People don't like him. There's a lot of people that don't like Nasser, but then to bring race and color and, like, from someone, I just don't understand why or how the abuse that he's had, and people think they're, like, helping or being on Jake's side and backing him up, and I just, you've seen the tweets and Jake's been, and I've seen Jake's tweeted back about it as well, and it's just crazy. I just think there's so many things that I see these days that I'm like, it's really, like, the year we're in, it's crazy that this stuff is even something that goes on. I don't understand it.
Okay, well, talking of people on Twitter, let's move on to the Ask ASCII section, if we're going to call it that. We asked at a very, very last moment whether people had any questions for you, Lewis, before we recorded this, and there's been quite a few, so let's try and run through a few. Some guy called Jake Stewart has
asked
the question: When will you be getting some new shoes? He asks.
I will admit that normally I'm not the best with this sort of stuff, but I am very excited to be getting a new pair of shoes in the post, which I will probably put something on Twitter or something about at some point when they arrive. So I am quite excited. I am going to be riding a new pair of shoes this year, which I'm excited about because I do have weird feet, and I'm excited to get on some shoes. Some fast, exciting shoes. So yeah, I will have some new, brand new, sparkling white shoes to try out.
Is new shoes a kind of a novelty for you then?
No, it's just that I've had these shoes for a winter and last season, and now they're I haven't brought myself anymore, and they're on their last legs. So I don't know. Yeah, it's just that I maybe haven't looked after my shoes to the highest standards, and now they're looking a bit grey.
Okay.
That's really.
So Jake's point is more that, you know, it's time you got a new pair of shoes.
Jake's point is more that, yeah, why you're a disgrace riding around in these grey shoes. Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Okay. Some other person on Twitter, again, I'm not sure who they are, it's called Ned Balting. is it true that Team Radio for the men's team is French? I think you said in the last episode that it was, that we recorded with you, but on the women's team it is in English.
So yeah, I can 100% tell you it is in French on the radio, very crackly. Radios are not the best thing in the world. Very crackly, fast French is the team radio for the men's. The women's team isn't really got much to do with us. I don't actually know, but I could imagine. I could imagine it could be. I don't know why I can imagine that, but then again, the French are very, very French. So I don't know much about the women's team. I don't know anything about the setup because it isn't the same. Like, we're not yeah, we're not the same, like the service course and all that sort of stuff. When you go to the World Tour, it's not the same thing. So it's not one, I don't know, like, so with us, with the Conti and the World Tour, we're almost like one entity. We're sort of interchangeable. We are the same. It's just like, not the same people, the same staff, but everyone's interlinked. Whereas the women's, it's not like that. So I don't know, but the French are very French. So I would be thinking it was it would be in French, but my answer to the question is I have not a clue.
No, from what I understand, that whilst you both share FDJ as a company, you know, that sponsors you, it's a different organization, isn't it? It's,
yeah, yeah.
So there isn't that kind of overlap that you have yeah. with the World Tour team. Yeah. And Stuart Blunt, of course, was a big factor in your development, and Jake's and others. There's an excellent article by
it's really good, that, yeah,
Rachel Jarry in Roulette about Stuart. People must read it if they haven't. But he asks, arm warmers come out at which temperature, Lewis?
It's going to depend on the length of the race. But for me, that comment is because as a junior, I would always race in terrible attire, as in no matter what the weather or the temperature or the wind or the whatever, I would race in skin suit. If it was cold, I'd put a base layer on underneath, and if it was warm, I wouldn't. Me and Stuart clashed because it was before Junior Roubaix, which is, he always goes on about it as well. It was an ongoing joke, because on the track, in the camps before Stuart was, I hadn't worn my leg warmers to the track or something like that, so I didn't have them on to do the warm-up. And I did it one day, and then Stuart was like, oh, if you do that again, I'm not taking you to Junior Roubaix and stuff like that. And then I remember, I'm sure I messed it up the other day, so I had to ride back to the hotel to grab my leg warmers and then ride back again. And then it was again, something happened on the morning of Roubaix where he was like, you're not wearing that, is there? And I was like, oh yeah, I am. And and then obviously I ended up having a good race. I don't know if, yeah, maybe I've got become more soft, or maybe I'm just more intelligent. But I've been wearing arm warmers quite a bit lately, because after having very bad experiences of riding 200K when you're too cold, 5 hours is a long time to be too cold. That I've now realized that you have time to take off jackets and you have time to take off stuff if you're not at the right temperature, but you don't tend to put, well, actually we do have wet bags to put stuff on, but yeah, you're not in a good situation to be too cold, whereas you can always chuck arm warmers, leg warmers off, which is nice. And now I tend to dress up and then take off clothes as the race goes on, but it was something I never believed I'd end up doing, but I have. So Stuart will be very happy with that.
Good to hear. This seems like a random question. Maybe it isn't, but I'll find out when I ask it. So Rob Barber has asked, who's your favourite gymnast?
Yes. So Rob was actually a gymnast, and a very, 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 very good one. I can't remember exactly. I should ask him, but I'm sure he's medaled. I'm sure he's had a bronze medal at like some game somewhere, or like he was like a really real top level gymnast. So yeah, that's why who is your favorite gymnast? But it's something nobody knows about him. Like, well, I didn't. Well, people obviously do, but I didn't have a clue until I don't know when, but yeah. It's quite cool. So that's why, who's your favorite gymnast? Because that would be him.
Okay. And and then a couple of people have asked about how you're getting on with your French. I think you explained last time that you're developing, but
it really is coming on. I mean, I'm sort of in the situation now where I'm understanding the majority of stuff, but not that I'm understanding everything. It's more that, say, if I understand 70% of what's going on in the conversation, I can fill in the blanks just by knowing the context. Do you know what I mean? So I might not be able to pick up every single word that's happening, but it is really getting better. And I've found since I've come out, I work a lot on my French now. I probably do an hour and a half, 2 hours. I don't know. It depends on the day, but I really try and use this opportunity that I've got this couple of years living in France, being around French all the time to try as hard as I possibly can to increase my level as quick as I can. And maybe, I think it's just such a good opportunity to be able to speak another language, and it's something I never thought I'd actually be able to do. So, yeah, I'm working as hard as I possibly can at it at the moment. So
it's good stuff. Getting
there. It really is.
And from what you're saying, when you said you've got the confidence to communicate with the world tour guys when you're riding with them, presumably that's all in French, you know, and having a grasp of the language really helps there.
Yeah, it really depends on which group you're in. It really depends, because a lot of guys, they prefer to speak in English, but a lot of the groups are in French. So it really depends who's speaking in the group. So it's really weird, because you can be going around a table and there can be like 3 or 4 different languages in the same conversation, depending on who's going, speaking to who. So yeah, it's sort of what people are most comfortable speaking in, but like most people speak English, but if everyone speaks French and there's French guys that don't speak great English, we'll tend to speak in French. And like when you speak with the staff and all that, it all tends to be in French. But yeah, it really does help being able to, I'd say more in the Conti as well, like being able to understand and get on. And actually, you know, there's a difference between getting on with someone just civilly because you can speak the odd word and they can speak the odd word, to actually being able to understand and joke around in a language. That I think that makes a big difference to the ambience in the team and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. Two more questions. Linda Billett, who I think is probably our number one fan at the British Continental, asks, what's the best and worst aspect of living in France?
Best and worst aspect of living in France? The best for me is I absolutely love this area of the world. I love the roads. I love the training. This year, having all the boys living in the same place and we're all getting on really well has been really cool. So it's been a really good vibe of like just enjoying ourselves, riding our bikes, and just the stuff that you have to do to be a good athlete, making that such an enjoyable process. I think that at the moment living in France is really cool, and Besançon is a really nice place to be based out of, I think personally. And I'm only a couple of hours away from some of my other favorite places like Morzine and like Geneva way. So for me, I'm sort of this is where I choose to come if I came on holiday. So for me, that's probably the best thing about being in France. The worst thing, why is the worst thing about being in France is I have to be a big boy and pay for all my own food and all my own, do all my own cleaning and do all that sort of stuff. That's like, God, that's like I'm a real adult. When I go home, I get, well, I'm better now, but like going for last year from getting cooked for and cleaned for, you have so much time in the day. So no, I don't know. There's not too much bad really going on, but yeah.
Great. Well, very diplomatically avoided actually slagging off France there, so well done. and the other question that Linda asked is, who do you admire most or try to emulate in the World Tour team, if anyone?
From 100% now, from literally last weekend, it would be Arno, just because of the way he's one of the, often I've found with some of the riders from different countries, are not great at being able to tell people when they've messed up. I think it's something, like I've spoke with Stuart about it, it's something that the guys that have been on the academy are really good at, is basically ripping into each other and telling each other why you've messed up and how you can improve on it. And a lot from different countries, they don't tend to do it as well, and you don't improve and you don't get better that way. And he is just such a nice guy and gets on with everyone. But then he's also, he can also really tell, like, when something goes wrong, he's the first to be able to say it and what we can do to prove, like, to improve on it next time. It's not something that's like, oh my God, what have you done there? You're never riding with this thing again. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just being able to say so we can next time improve on what we did, on what we messed up on. And yeah, just the way he gets on with everyone and is a nice guy and also a legend on a bike is, I'd say, someone I aspire. I'd love to be as fast as him, to be fair. I need to work on my sprint, but yeah, just in general, his mannerisms, I think, is cool.
Excellent, excellent. So that's the end of the Ask ASCII section. Just finally, Lewis, what's next on the agenda for you? Do you know?
No, not really. I may be coming home for a little bit of time with no races going on. And then I hopefully will be racing in Switzerland on the 2nd of May for a mountain bike race. So that'll be exciting. I've not raced mountain bike in a very long time. But I'm going to give it a go. I'd like to see what I can do on a mountain bike. I think with some of the courses, they can suit me. But we'll see. I have no idea where I'll be putting myself, but that's another reason why I want to do it. I think it's good training as well. And then road-wise, I start back second weekend in May, and then I'm full gas through May. I think I've got, I don't know what the race is called, on the 7th of May. And then I'm racing the next week and the next week, and then I've got a tour. And then I've got a week or so off, and then it's baby Giro for me, hopefully. Not 100%, but that should be the plan. So yeah, I've got a couple of weeks now of a bit more chill, and then train up, race full gas in May, recover a little bit, and then baby Giro, and then possibly a little bit of time off. So that is the rough, not really knowing what's going on plan.
And do you, within that program, are you training to peak for any particular events?
I mean, Giro will be a big, I think it's like the biggest goal really for the team for the year is to perform well, to be on form for the Giro. But we'll probably go into them that May. Basically, we'll probably train well into that block in May and then use them to just get faster and faster as we get through and then recover to Giro, and we should be flying. That's the plan anyway. But yeah, Giro will be a big goal, definitely.
Great stuff. Great stuff. And Lewis, I will get your diaries out from last year. I think the plan now is for me to finish editing the diaries before the Giro to kind of get people excited. Year's edition.
No worries.
Great. Well, I think that's everything for this episode, Lewis. I guess we'll maybe check in with you just before the baby Giro or around then, maybe after your next block of racing. That would be great if we could see how you've been getting on. And it'd be fascinating to hear about your mountain bike exploits. Is there any particular reason you're kind of keen to do that?
Yes. One, I like to race. I like to keep stuff fresh. I like to keep stuff new. And I think it's really good training. But I also, the Commonwealth Games is in Birmingham, 5 minutes away from my house next year, for the mountain bike. So I am going to do a couple of mountain bike races just to see where I'm at and see if that's something that could be a possibility or not. But again, like I say, I have no idea. I could be absolutely rubbish. So we'll see. But yeah, that would be a cool, something really, really cool. If, it's just something I got in my head that I might be able to do if I ended up being any good at mountain biking. And I'm never going to know if I don't try. So this is what I'm going to have a go and try.
Brilliant. Well, best of luck with that, Lewis. We'll keep an eye on your results and we'll catch up with you. Hopefully just pull the baby Giro. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do leave us a nice review. You can subscribe on all the usual channels, and you can follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at British Conti, and on Instagram, we are at the British Continental. And please do visit our website for more interviews, journals, previews, and news at thebritishcontinental.co.uk.